I'm really pleased to welcome you and Dave Williams, our presenter. Dave, I think I first heard maybe 10 or more years ago on ACB Radio. I've also since then heard him on In Touch. Of course, RNIB Tech Talk, and he's one of the founders of the Braillists, and that they also have a podcast. So who better to talk about podcasting? Dave, take it away.
Good evening, everybody. A very warm welcome to this session in which we will explore tried and tested processes, accessible tools, and techniques that we blind people can use to plan, prepare, produce, promote, publish our own podcasts. It's wonderful to be with you. It's been certainly more than 10 years ago since I was on ACB Radio, but very happy memories of those days. So, in this session, we're going to be talking about how you would go about planning your podcast. What are all the things that you need to do before you go anywhere near any equipment or websites or services? And then, what equipment might you use, and how would you prepare your environment for recording? And then, what about the choice of accessible recording tools? We'll dig a little bit into that as well. And then, we'll talk a bit about post-production and how you share your podcast with your audience. And of course, there'll be lots of opportunities to ask questions, and I'll be sharing further resources as well. I'm just going to back it up a little bit and talk about myself. Sorry about that. Perfect face for radio and all that. But I figure I shouldn't assume that everybody is familiar with my background. So I've been producing and publishing audio online now for about 25 years. And for the last 2 years, I've been hosting the UK's leading access technology podcast and radio show, Tech Talk, for RNIB Connect Radio, Tech Talk. As the chair of the Braillist Foundation, I planned, designed, and launched Braillecast, which is, I think, one of the first podcasts that you can find about Braille. I wanted a podcast about Braille, couldn't find any, and realized that the only way I was going to get one was to start one. So Braillecast is the official podcast of the Braillist Foundation. As Pete alluded to, I am the former director of ACB Radio, which is a service of the American Council of the Blind. I inherited that role when ACB Radio's founder, Jonathan Mosen, was headhunted for a job in technology. And the American Council of the Blind looked amongst the volunteers at that time, and I was approached, and I directed ACB Radio between 2003 and 2006, during which time I produced over 100 episodes of Main Menu, which was their technology show. We also had the privilege of delivering live coverage of the World Blind Union General Assembly from Cape Town in South Africa. And as a freelance journalist, I've contributed numerous audio reports and packages to BBC Radio 4's In Touch, covering subjects as diverse as bereavement, participation in sport, technology, marriage, travel, and many other subjects besides. I've also got a bit of a background in marketing. I've worked as a voiceover artist. And I ran my own accessible technology training business before joining RNIB in 2019. Now I regularly appear as a spokesperson for RNIB in broadcast and print media. And I also have the privilege of sitting on the steering committee for Sound Without Sight, which is an RNIB-backed project that aims to get blind and partially sighted people into audio production and music production. So a bit of a kind of a varied CV. I'm very happy to answer any questions about any of that in a little while. I think the highlight of my career so far has was last month, actually in March, sorry, we're in May now. In March this year, I had the rare honor of interviewing the musician and all-round blindness icon, Stevie Wonder. And you can find that recording, along with many others from the California State University Conference on Technology and Disability, on our Audio Boom feed. And I've shared that link in the notes that you can access. So Peter has that. So if you want to listen to the interview with Stevie Wonder, where he speaks about accessibility, Braille, and music, then you're very welcome to do so. So let's talk about your content considerations then. So, what's the first thing that you really need to think about if you're planning to make a podcast? I think you need to ask yourself, why? Just a really deep searching question, because of course, there's gazillions of podcasts out there, and I know Adam Buxton has a little jingle in which he sings, "I've added another podcast to the podcast bin." So they're kind of disposable, podcasts, and we are inundated with them. So I think you have to ask yourself that really strong searching question: what is it you're aiming to do? Why do you need to make a podcast? And it might be because you've got a product that you want to promote. It might be that you want to promote something for, like, an issue, like, I don't know, well-being, or you want to do something around mental health. But trying to think about what it is you want to achieve, and how will you know when you've achieved that thing? So maybe even trying to come up with a SMART objective. In business, they talk about specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-bound. So maybe you want to get to, I don't know, 50 regular listeners in your first 10 episodes or something. But just give yourself, even if you don't kind of hit that objective, just giving yourself an objective and writing it down helps you really focus on the why it is that you want to create a podcast. And also ask yourself, who are you? Who are you? Are you somebody that is really comfortable in front of a microphone? Are you very happy talking? Do people like to listen to you talking? Or actually, are you more a kind of a technical person? Is it the button pushing that you really enjoy? Do you like the kind of the editing and the more of the technical side? Of course, you can do both, but you don't have to do everything. It might be that you're somebody who's very active on social media, right? And you actually are more a kind of a promoter type of person. And so, do you need to build yourself a little team? I knew, for example, when I was starting Braillecast, that I couldn't do it all on myself, right? I didn't have the first clue how to set up a podcast feed, and I couldn't find any services at the time that I could really afford. And I knew the technical people that were able to help me with that. So I spoke to people like, Gordon Luke, and I see Darren Pascal's on this call as well. And, I think he might have been involved a bit. And I talked to Matthew Horsball, who's ended up hosting Braillecast. But I was the guy who kind of had the vision, I had the contacts, and I had the kind of the idea to bring it to fruition. So ask yourself, what is your role? Because you don't have to do it all yourself. Maybe think about assembling that team and figuring out what your role is within that. Also, give some thought to your audience, right? Is your audience other blind people, other people who are enthusiastic about technology? That might tell you something about where you're going to pitch your content. So, with Tech Talk, for example, yes, we are a technology podcast, but we try not to get too technical on Tech Talk, because we're very aware that many of our listeners are tuning in on Freeview, on FM, and are not necessarily the most technical kind of audience out there. So there are many more blindness technology podcasts that definitely go much deeper in terms of demonstrations and detail than we do. But we have, and we can tell who our audience is based on the feedback that we get. And that might be a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, but I think sometimes, there's the kind of the tech haves and the tech have-nots. And I'd like to think that with Tech Talk, we try to really bridge that gap and introduce people to technology in a kind of a friendly, useful, non-threatening, and accessible way. So what assumptions are you making about your audience? Where are they most likely to listen? What are their life experiences most most likely to be? What knowledge are they bringing with them into the podcast? And then, of course, for a given episode, what are the key points that you're going to make? And how might that information change between the time that you make your recording and the time that people hear it? So there are some podcasts, for example, that have a very short turnaround. They record and publish on the same day and are able to follow news events in a very kind of fast moving way with Tech Talk, just because of the nature of the way the program is put together and published. We tend to be recording about a week in advance. So we just need to be a little bit circumspect about when we're covering news stories. So, for example, you'll be aware at the moment in the news, there's this whole story about Sonos and about how the app is less accessible. And we're going to be talking about that, of course, on the podcast. But we've got to think about what might change, right? They might fix it before we put out the episode, right? So what can we say that is going to be interesting, useful, meaningful by the time it lands in the ears of our listeners? So just bearing that all in mind, that actually people may come back to your podcast, you know, potentially days, weeks, months after the event has happened. So try to keep that in mind when planning your content. Also, think about the format. So by the format, I mean, is it interview-led? So a lot of my content tends to be interview-led. I think, well, what do people want to know about this person? What do they want to know about this subject, right? So when I interviewed Netflix, for example, I asked Netflix, and of course they didn't give me a straight answer, but I asked them, you know, to what extent are you thinking about using AI when it comes to audio description? Because they produce a lot of audio described content, right? That's a question that I, as a consumer, would want to know. And they came back and said, well, actually, all options are on the table. You know, we want to consider all the possibilities out there when it comes to developing audio description. So that's why I like a kind of an interview-led format. But other podcasts tend to be more demonstration-led. So if you're listening to, say, something like Apple Viz, a lot of the time their podcasts are very demonstration-led. So they found an app, they're showing you how to do a thing. So it's more a kind of like a how-to type podcast. Or it might be that you're doing like the fireside chat kind of round table format. So there's a podcast called Clockwise, where they have four people, each brings a subject, and then the other three, they talk through each of the four subjects, and each of the other three people react to each of those subjects. So, you know, that's not a guest or a demo. It's more a kind of a round table sort of format. So think about your format, because people, you know, they have their preferences. It doesn't mean that you can't do specials or you can't break out of your format from time to time, but it just gives your listener a little bit of security and assurance of knowing what they can expect. And also be very clear about, when you're presenting content in your podcast, what is a fact and what is your opinion or the opinion of your guests? And it's absolutely fine, right? There are lots of very opinionated and opinion-based podcasts out there, but don't present something as fact when actually it's somebody's opinion, because that will really damage your credibility as a podcast. And bad news travels faster than good news, as you know. So make sure that you're very clear when you're presenting your content, what is factual and what is just your view. Just a note about recording screen readers. There is a real skill to recording a screen reader, particularly, you know, those of us that want to record demonstrations, technology demonstrations, making sure that your screen reader can be heard by your listener. So a couple of tips there. Make sure that the screen reader's speech is understandable. I've heard podcasts where the speech is very fast, which is fine for an experienced blind user. And if your only listeners are experienced screen reader users, then fine. But actually, if you want to reach a broader audience, think about the default voice that you get on, say, something like Alexa. You know, that's going to be intelligible by a wider number of people. And if you have the tools and skills to do it, recording the screen reader to a separate track is great in case you accidentally speak over the screen reader, or if you need to edit the screen reader separate from your narration of what's happening. So just try to think carefully about how you're going to record your screen reader and what you might need to do with that in post-production and setting a voice that's sort of sensible. And then I think it's also important to manage expectations in terms of duration. Keep your podcast reasonably predictable length. It there's no hard and fast with this stuff. These are just things that I've found that work. Because what happens is people fit your podcast into their life, right? So they might have like a 20-minute commute when they listen to your podcast. Well, if suddenly your podcast is 28 minutes one week and you normally publish 20 minutes, then they're not going to catch the end of it, or they perhaps don't come back to it, or they don't hear the best bit, which might be near the end. So try if you can to be a little bit consistent with your duration, your running time. Personally, I like my podcasts in that kind of half an hour to 50 minute sort of range, maybe an hour max. I've just not got the time to listen, even at double speed, to listen to some of these like 3-hour podcasts. And then obviously think about where it's going to be heard. If you're making a podcast for education, obviously you need to think about making sure that content is family friendly. If you're making a podcast for blokes when they come home from the pub, then it might be that you can be a bit more risque with your content or your language. And then don't forget, what is your call to action, right? It's all very well going to all the time and effort of creating your podcast. You've understood your audience, you've understood the benefit of your podcast, it's beautifully produced, but what do you actually want people to do? Right? What do you want them to do at the end? Right? You might want them to contact you. Of course, every podcaster wants to be contacted, whether it be on social media or email or whatever. But actually, do you want people to tune in next time? Do you want people to go out and do something? Do you want somebody to take an action? And if you do want somebody to take an action as a result of your podcast, make sure that you include that call to action, throughout the podcast, and especially at the end. So I don't know, if your podcast is about getting fit, then encourage your listener, give it a go. Go and try this. Let us know how you get on. And make sure that call to action is very evident in your podcast. And if you have a brand, if you're producing a podcast for like RNIB, for example, I'm producing podcasts for RNIB. Obviously, I'm very regularly name checking RNIB Connect Radio. Throughout the podcast, you'll hear you're listening to, right? And of course, you're listening to it. But if somebody else walks in the room, or somebody else overhears it, or whatever, and it just by name checking your brand regularly, it just reinforces you're listening to the Tavit podcast, that you're with the Pete Bosher Tavit podcast, right? And make sure you say it the same way every time, and that you get that pronunciation right, so that everybody's in absolutely no doubt what is your brand. Okay, so those are my main content considerations. Before we get into preparing your recording environment and some of the equipment and some of the more technical aspects, does anybody have any thoughts or questions or comments or observations or things that you would like to ask or share around content considerations?
Dave, Terry has a hand up. So we didn't talk about raising hands. Normally we don't use raised hands all that much, because it's not that obvious when someone does. But Terry, if you'd like to maybe put a question, as you have raised your hand.
Hi, it's Derry, actually. How are you keeping?
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know about the raised hands. Yeah, Dave, great to hear you. I've got a little podcast. I do one every month. The first of every month is called the Book Lover Show, and it's under 5 minutes long at the moment. That's the length of my podcast. But about the content, you're saying making the call to action. So if I want people to get this book, is there a way of giving links in your notes to the book, we'll say, in what provider you use? I'm using JustCast at the moment. And is there better ones than that, basically?
Yeah, so when you're publishing your podcast, depending on the service that you use to publish your podcast, you can add notes, and you should be able to paste a link in there. What I would say, though, is think about what's an audio friendly way as well to share that information. So you say the name of the book, and you say if you search on whatever the name of the platform is for, you know, the keywords of the book, and it's the first, and check that that works. You know, it really grates, doesn't it? You know, when you hear somebody give out a really long and complicated link on a podcast, and like yeah. you can't write it down, or you don't get it accurate, or you know, whatever it is, you know, and you know, something I really rail about is rail against understanding what actually works well in audio doesn't necessarily work well. You know what works well in print doesn't necessarily work well in audio. So yes, you can just paste your URL to wherever you want to link to in your podcast notes. But I would also say it in the audio of the podcast. And you also raise another really important point, Derry, is that you said I publish my podcast on the first of every month, and I think that's really critical, because if you're launching a podcast, plan your content, plan the first, I don't know, six episodes, but plan your publication schedule. So when's it going to go out, right? Is it always going to be on the certain date in the month? Is it always going to be on a Wednesday? When can people expect it? It is that consistency and that regularity that listeners really come to rely on, and they're more likely to stick with you if you're dependable. You know, if you're just publishing intermittently, then people just kind of forget you're there, and they don't tune in, and they're perhaps not as attentive. So yeah, I would say do both. And depending on, do you say Acast you're using?
Just cast. It's a Dropbox. Yeah. You have an app in your Dropbox. You have the apps, and then in there you've got one called Just Cast. In there, the name of the name of the podcast, and you just copy them in there. So just drop the name. But it's, so, I'm thinking of Pinecast might be a better one. But
That's the one I'm going to recommend later on because that does a lot of like the hard work for you and does a lot of the hand holding. It's got very clear descriptions. We know it to be very accessible as well. I mean, it might be worth checking with Just Cast to see if they have a way of publishing show notes as well. They may or may not do, because it's all to do with the RSS feed. So
yeah, they used to publish to X or Twitter, as it was called. It was great little synopsis of the podcast every month, but not anymore. I've been doing one there for the last 2 years or so, 3 years.
Yeah. So the thing that makes a podcast isn't the fact that you put a bunch of audio online, right? And there are lots of cloud storage services. We can, you know, any of us record some audio, put it on a Dropbox or a OneDrive or iCloud or whatever, and we can share the public link to that on our social media. Now, technically, that's not a podcast.
No.
A podcast is a feed. It's an XML feed that contains audio enclosures, which basically means that the page that contains the podcast feed has very specific instructions to tell the podcast client, okay, this is the title, this is the description, here's the file, and here's the, you know, the show notes and so on. So something like Pinecast will absolutely, you know, kind of help you with all of that. So it sounds like JustCast is maybe a slightly more basic kind of service. I haven't used it, so I can't really comment on it directly. And it may be that it does support show notes. And if anybody else knows, feel free to chime in. I certainly haven't got all the answers here. I'm just sharing, you know, what I found to work. So, but I appreciate the question. And certainly, yeah, putting links in show notes is a great way to send people off to resources, but also think about how you might make that audio call to action, because some people will listen to your podcast on a smart speaker where it's not always easy to access the show notes. So make sure that you have an audio kind of equivalent to, okay, go to this web page, but try and find a short way to say it or to search for it that is memorable and reliable.
Great, thanks, Dave. Great.
No worries. Okay, so when you're preparing to record your podcast, so you've figured out, okay, how often is it going to be? How long is it going to be? What's the format and all that stuff that we've just talked about? Then you come in to record, you know, and you might think, okay, well, what I need to do is record, you know, my first like six episodes. So I've got a little bit of a buffer. I've got some content out there while I'm working on the next, you know, batch of episodes. So you can do all your recording in like in a day's session, and then you can drip your podcasts out weekly or monthly or whatever the frequency happens to be. But it's always a good idea to have a little bit of a plan and be a few episodes ahead of where you're going to be, because we all know what it's like, don't we, Darren Pascal, when we're scrambling the day before to try and find some content for something, a show or something like that, that we're trying to get out of the door, right? Because then what happens is quality will always suffer in the end. If you're pushing up against that deadline and you're rushing to get something out the door, then something's got to give, and usually it's the quality, and that really shows. So if you've got a plan, then things are going to, you're going to feel much more relaxed, you're going to sound a lot less stressed and all of that, right? So you've sorted out all of that, so now you come into recording, okay? And the first thing is to think about the soundproofing and the acoustics of your recording space. And it's important to separate these two things because they often get conflated. And so soundproofing, the objective of soundproofing is to minimize any external noise entering the space, right? So this might be closing windows, closing doors. It might be building a room within a room, to basically seal the space from outside noise. So if you're looking for that really dry, sound, that kind of almost sort of broadcast quality sound, you want to minimize as much as possible interruptions, because when it comes to editing, if you had a car going past and you want to edit, kind of mid-car, then you're going to get this horrible kind of jump in your audio where the car's there and then suddenly it's not, right? So the purpose of soundproofing is to just block out all external noise. Some people record in an airing cupboard, some people record under a quilt. And actually, you may not need soundproofing, right? If you're doing a podcast about nature, for example, if anyone's listening to Ramblings with Claire Balding, for example, then actually you might deliberately choose not to soundproof, right? If the ambient noise of, the nature or maybe traffic or whatever, if that's part of your podcast, if that's part of what you're, imagine listening to a football match without the crowd noise, right? So you might decide that actually I don't want to do soundproofing. But actually, even if you do want to include those sound effects in the background, it's sometimes a really great idea to record your voice track separately from the kind of the ambient noise, because it means then that you can adjust those levels separately in your post production. So think about recording your voice separately from any ambient noise that you might intentionally want to include. But most of my podcasts tend to be in a quiet space. Now, acoustic treatment is a very separate concept to soundproofing, because what you're trying to do with acoustic treatment is reduce the amount of reverb and kind of reflection and kind of echo and that kind of live sound. If you walk, for example, if you talk and talk in your bedroom and then you walk into your bathroom, if your bathroom or go into the shower, for example, where there's really hard surfaces around you, you'll notice that the sound of the space is very different, right? In your bedroom, typically you would expect to hear a much more muted, a much drier sound, whereas in a kitchen or a bathroom where there are more hard surfaces, you get that kind of reverb. And you can buy acoustic tiles, just search for acoustic tiles on Amazon. I think I probably paid about 40 quid or something for a big box of acoustic tiles that I stuck up on the wall in my back bedroom at home. And I walked around the house firstly to choose which was the quietest room, because I didn't have the resources to build a room within a room and a professional studio and all of that. So I had to select what I thought was going to be the quietest room and then close the doors and windows. And so that was my soundproofing kind of effort. And then to acoustically treat that space, I got my acoustic tiles that they just feel like foam tiles. Mine have got like sort of almost like a triangular ridge pattern on the front that basically reduces that reflection that you get when your voice kind of bounces off the wall. So think about that space. Obviously minimize interruptions. I don't think we really need to talk too much about that. If you are somebody that is going to include recordings on location in your podcast where you have less control of your environment, try if you can to step away from the main kind of crowd. There was a moment when we did the recording with Stevie Wonder where we had to stop the recording because we were getting jostled by the crowd because everybody wanted to get their picture with Stevie. And what we should have done is, you know, gone away to kind of one side of the room and maybe even sat down or something like that. But I was so eager to get it recorded. I was just sort of stood with him in the middle of the crowd, and people started trying to encroach in our space. And it was so funny, actually. He reached out and grabbed my arm and started guiding me. And I was like, oh, hang on a minute, drop the mic. I'm now being guided, sighted guided by Stevie Wonder. And also, when you are recording on location, as much as possible, try to avoid recording in places where there's background music, again, for editing reasons, because if you need to make any cuts later on, you're going to get these horrible jumps in the background music, which are going to be really obvious. So, you know, if you're in a coffee shop or something like that and they're playing music, maybe try and find somewhere else or ask them, is there any chance we can just, you know, turn the music off for a few seconds while I record this thing? But I would probably step outside in that situation. And something that's really important if you're recording on location is to make sure you've got a really big, fluffy pop shield on the end of your microphone to minimize the amount of wind that you get in your recording. Okay, when you're thinking about your microphone, practice your microphone technique. So record yourself speaking and then play it back. Does your voice sound echoey? Do you sound like you're too far away? Or do you sound like you're distorting? Get somebody else to have a little listen as well and get them to offer you feedback. I tend to find that a good kind of rule of thumb when, you know, using sort of most kind of off the shelf kind of prosumer level microphones is to use the span of my hand. So between the tip of my little finger and the tip of my thumb, between my mouth and the position of the end of the microphone is usually, you know, a good distance for me to be talking away from a microphone. So practice with that. Make sure that you've got a pop shield. That's the very thing that goes over the end of your microphone. And then, of course, also take good care of your voice, right? That's your main kind of instrument. That's the thing that people are going to be listening to. I can recommend a brand of lozenge called Vocal Zone. They've even got Braille on the box. And they're just, you know, really inoffensive little lemon kind of almost sweet that you can suck. And they just bring a little bit of moisture to your mouth. You can always tell if somebody's mouth is dry. You get a lot of mouth noise. And some microphones are really unforgiving of mouth noise. So try to make sure that somebody has taken good care of their voice, whether you're recording them or recording yourself. Really important to do that. Often you think, oh, a glass of cold water or, you know, three coffees. And both of those things are usually a bad idea. Cold water cools down your vocal cords. Coffee makes you speak too fast and too much. So, you know, something kind of room temperature, a little drink is fine if you've got a frog in the throat. But yeah, those vocal zones are quite good. I also quite like the lemon and ginger drink that you can get in Pret as well. That's quite good for public speaking. So before we go on to talking about the tools that you might need for recording, has anyone got any thoughts about the recording environment, about the place where you record, how you record, voice care, anything like that? Anyone got any comments, questions, observations that you want to come in with at this point? If not, then we will move on and we will talk about the different ways in which you can record. So if you're recording online, so if a lot of your guests are remote, you know, to you, then you essentially have two options when it comes to recording. You can either use a meeting platform like Teams, Google Meet or Zoom. Yeah, and they're obviously very popular, they're well known. It's quite likely that your guest is going to be comfortable and familiar with those platforms. So that's certainly an advantage. Your other option, though, is to use an audio production platform that is used in industry. So I'm thinking of services like CleanFeed or Riverside FM. And these are services that you can, there's usually a basic kind of free option, and then you can pay a small amount each month if you want the pro version. And usually the pro version lets you record to kind of multiple channels and for longer and stuff like that. Now, the benefit of those pro services is usually you can separate everybody out onto separate tracks. You usually get a lossless recording of each contributor. So when you record something to a WAV file, that's not gone through any kind of compression process, which is quite important if you want to preserve the quality of that recording. It also allows you to place markers when you're conducting your recording as well. So markers come in handy later on when you get to editing. If you want to jump to different questions throughout your interview, for example, then having markers in place when you do your recording is super helpful. However, when it comes to those meeting platforms, right? The disadvantage there is often the quality can be quite low fidelity. Often those platforms put everybody on a single track if you're using Teams or Google Meet. I have found though that Zoom offers almost a happy kind of compromise because you can record on Zoom and you can have everybody recorded two separate tracks, and you can also encourage your guests to switch on original audio, which turns off all the kind of the meeting processing, because those meetings are designed so that everybody can just really quickly jump on, have a chat about something that's important for their business. Everyone can hear each other, so they tend to filter out all the background noise and level everybody off, which is great for a meeting. But if you're trying to produce something that sounds really high quality and professionally produced, then it can have a detrimental impact in your final product. So try to think carefully about what platforms, and you might use a mix, right? And we, certainly on Tech Talk, we use a mix because it depends who we're talking to and how quickly we need to turn it round and what services people are comfortable with. So happy to talk about that more in a second. If you are using your phone to make a recording, and a lot of people are, you can actually achieve quite a lot with the built-in app. So most tablets, most smartphones have a built-in sound recorder app. And if you want to record a link, or you want to record something really spontaneously, then actually those apps can produce good results if you've got a decent microphone connected. But there are third-party apps out there. I use one called Backpack Studio. There's Hokusai and Ferrite, which are third-party apps on the iPhone. And there are a bunch for Android as well. I'm sure everyone has recommendations, keen to hear what apps you're using for recording. The key thing with some of these third-party apps that I really appreciate is that you can hear your own voice in your earphones. So if you're recording using just a kind of a voice memo type app, very often you don't know what you sound like as you're recording. So you don't know if you're too close to the microphone or if you're too far away. So somebody who's perhaps a more professional audio recorder is going to want to hear themselves while they're recording. And so they're more likely to prefer one of those third-party apps. We also have options when it comes to standalone digital recorders. So I'm coming to you tonight from Frankfurt, and tomorrow I'm going to be going around Sight City, which is a big technology exhibition. It's a bit like Sight Village with knobs on. And I'm going to be recording interviews with people, and I don't want to wear down my phone battery while I'm, while I'm there. I should say, actually, a point I meant to mention when we were talking about recording using phone apps: make sure you put your phone in airplane mode. You'll get much better results and avoid interference that way. But when it comes to standalone recorders, which is what I'm going to be using tomorrow, I'm going to be using one of the Zoom H Essential series recorders that have recently been released. And they're great. They come in three options. You've got the, well, I can talk through those if you're interested. There are also products from Olympus and other manufacturers as well. But actually, using a dedicated recorder often means you've got tactile controls, which I found very reassuring. And of course, you're able to transfer your content then from your standalone recorder straight onto your computer, where you might be uploading it or editing it or performing further action on it. So, It really depends on the situation. I do all of the above. I record online, I record on my phone, I also record using standalone recorders. But the most important thing is become really familiar with your tools, right? Don't take your brand new shiny recorder out of the box and then run off to get your big, killer interview with Stevie Wonder. You want to make sure that your device is you know it as well as the back of your hand when you come to make that recording. So practice, practice, practice with whatever device you intend recording with. Now, if you are recording on your desktop and maybe you're recording face to face, or maybe you've got other sound sources that you want to bring in, I talked about screen readers earlier on, for example, then you may want to use something called an audio interface. Okay, so tonight I've just got some USB-C headphones and microphone plugged into my laptop, and it's all right, it'll do. But if I were recording a podcast, I would want to have an audio interface plugged in here. So then I could plug in a more professional microphone, and I could maybe even include other sound sources as well. And of course, the next level on from that is to use a small mixer where you might have sound effects, or you might have different guests on other channels coming in from other devices. And that's getting a little bit beyond the scope of this and getting more into the kind of radio production environment. When choosing a microphone, you've essentially got two choices. You're either probably going to get a dynamic microphone or a condenser microphone. And essentially, the difference is that dynamic microphones tend to be a little bit cheaper. They tend to be a little bit more rugged and a little bit more versatile, particularly when you're out in the field. Condenser microphones tend to be a bit more sensitive. You can get higher quality results, but they are better suited to environments where you've got more control over the environment. So you're probably more likely to use a condenser microphone in the studio. But I know Pete's an audio engineer, so I'm sure he can weigh in on some of that. So now we come to actually hitting record. Believe it or not, he says, we're only, what, three quarters of an hour in, and we're actually getting to press record. Finally, we've got all our equipment, all our environment, all our content all lined up and ready to go. So when it comes to making your recording, think about how is your microphone going to be held, right? Have you got a stand? Have you got a wall mount? Have you got a boom arm? Or if you're on location, does the microphone that you're recording with have any handling noise? How is your microphone going to be held? That's so important. I've heard great podcasts ruined because they hadn't thought about how they were going to hold the microphone, and you can hear their mic changing hands or somebody changing their grip or something like that. So just think about how your microphone is going to be held. I know last year did some recording on location, and I think we probably over-engineered it. We had mic stands and wires going everywhere. Beautiful recordings, but just a nightmare to set up. And we had to bring our guests over to a particular location to be recorded, and all of that. So it wasn't quite spontaneous. So just try and get that balance right between how your mic's going to be held versus how flexible do you need to be. Also, do you need to refer to notes while you're recording, right? So you might not have a hand free to hold your microphone. How are you going to refer to notes? Can you use your screen reader while you're recording? Do you need braille notes? Do you need hard copy braille notes? I'm using a refreshable braille display for my notes for this presentation. But I know when I sit in the studio with Peter White, when I've recorded content from Touch, he does everything from hard copy braille, and he's an absolute master at it. He prefers single side. He tends to slide a sheet across and start reading the next page before he's finished speaking the previous page. And that is a skill that only comes with, days and months and weeks and years of absolute dedicated practice. And also think about placing markers. I mentioned this a little bit earlier. If you're going for an interview format, right, you might decide, actually, do you know what, that question I asked didn't really go well or the way I thought it would, I want to take that question out. And so how are you going to jump to that question in the middle of your audio? Well, there is a way to do this. So if you're using a tool that allows you to add a marker while you're recording, so on the Zoom recorders, for example, there is a marker button, so you can press that just before you ask each question. And that means that in the recording, then you can jump through to different parts of your recording, and that enables you to take out bits that you don't necessarily want to be included in the final mix. And of course, again, you know, testing, 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 and getting second opinions. Maybe make a couple of pilot episodes and let, you know, a couple of trusted friends have a listen to it. Send it to somebody who you feel's judgment, whose judgment you trust, and get their feedback before you go ahead and launch your podcast, because you don't want your listener to have to listen to you learning on the job. So happy to take a breath and hear any questions or comments that anyone might have about recording equipment, making the recording, or any of the subjects we've covered in this last section.
Hi, Dave. Tim Pennick here. I'm just wondering, do the systems like CleanFeed that now allow you to mark places in your recording, do the markers transfer actually to something like Reaper? You know, are they actually honoured by Reaper or SoundForge or whatever?
I'm going to say yes, but I am touching wood while I'm saying that. So it's not something I've tested recently. I'm very lucky in Tech Talk to have a producer who does some of our post-production for us. So I'm more about planning the content and asking the questions and doing the hosting, because I only have a limited amount of time to spend on it. Certainly, the Zoom recorder markers do translate over to Reaper. I'm pretty sure, if anyone else wants to come in on answering that, I want to say I'm sort of 70% sure that those markers do carry across.
Thanks.
Hi, Dave. It's Ed Green. I hope you're all right.
Hi, Ed.
Oh, yeah. What I would say, it depends how you want to use your markers, I think. So if they are honored in Reaper, what they certainly won't do is convert to chapters. Conscious we haven't touched on chapters yet, because in Reaper that'll require a special syntax. So they may well, I don't know whether they do from CleanFeed or not, but if you were thinking of going, okay, I'll mark the end of that section there and call it a chapter, that won't be on in Reaper, definitely. It might well act as a little counter, and you know, like it does on the Zoom recorder, though. I don't know about that.
Do you know, Ed, I might get you to come back in and talk a bit about chapters in a second, because
sure.
I haven't got a lot on chapters, and I know they are incredibly useful. The reality is most podcasters don't use them, and most podcast listeners are unaware of them. So it'd be wonderful if you would just give us 30 seconds on chapters in a second.
I think their mom might, by the way. I do it because people want us to, or they say they do. I don't use them, but we've been asked to do it, so I do it.
Yeah.
But I'll talk more about them in a bit.
I always feel it's one of those things. I always feel like I should be doing them, but I never get an email saying, why don't you do chapters? You know, you listen to a lot of mainstream podcasts, and you know, I've yet to find a, you know, I know a couple of blindness podcasts that do chapters, but
yeah.
You know, quite a lot of the ones like, you know, BBC podcasts and stuff like that. Are they doing chapters?
I agree with you. Yeah, I doubt it.
I don't know.
I don't think anybody bothers, because most people listen when they're running, right, or on a train. No one's like going, going to skip to chapter 4 now.
You've been stalking me, I can tell.
but people want it done, so I'll do it.
It's exactly when I listen.
I have a question if anyone can hear me.
Sorry.
Hello.
Can anyone hear me?
Yes, we can, yeah.
All right. I just want to know, this is Justin here in the U.S. I just want to know, I'd like to do a podcast, and I would want to refer to notes, like Bible notes, look for stuff while I'm doing the podcast. How do I do that without people hearing my screen reader or me using the keyboard or something like that? I don't have a lot of editing experience. So that's what kind of setup would I need for that? I was thinking about trying to get some headphones and plug it into the PC and using a recording, a standalone device or my phone or something, but you tell me what to do.
Yeah. So I would say the first thing is to absolutely get some headphones. Because if you're going to be using your screen reader while you're recording, and we don't want the screen reader in the audio, you need some really good headphones because your microphone is going to pick up that bleed from your screen reader, even if it's really quiet, right? And if you just use like the little Apple in-ear type headphones, your microphone's gonna pick that up. So I would try and get some really good quality over-the-ear kind of headphones to isolate your screen reader from your microphone. The second thing you might want to think about is the physical isolation of your microphone from your keyboard, right? So maybe putting your mic on a stand or an arm that is attached to a surface that your keyboard is not on. So quite often you'll hear people rattling away on their keyboards and the mic is sat on the same desk next to their computer, and all you can hear, and it's like you get this rumbling and this horrible banging noise as somebody's trying to use their keyboard. So you could either get like a wireless keyboard and have that on your lap and have your microphone on the desk, or you might get a boom arm that you attach to the wall and then have your microphone on the end of the boom arm, which then isolates the microphone from the keyboard. So isolating your screen reader from the audio, isolating your keyboard from the microphone, they would be two really big things that you could do straight away in that scenario. Also, I would say if you're going to be looking stuff up during a podcast and you want to be able to search, a text like the Bible, I would make sure that you're absolutely a keyboard ninja on your screen reader. So that you know how to search that content and find the thing that you want, or perhaps, and maybe this wasn't where you wanted to be, is maybe plan the podcast a little bit more in detail and think about, okay, which are the quotes and which are the notes that I want to refer to, and pull those out ahead of time. And that's what I would do, is I would think, okay, there's kind of maybe 6 points that I'm going to cover in this podcast. What are the quotes that support this? What are the notes, the references that I'm going to talk about or include or speak to? And then I would pull those out into a separate notepad that I would then have. So I don't have to be doing a lot of jumping around and searching, because you know what it's like when you're a screen reader user, you lose your place and it's just a nightmare, particularly, if you're using Braille as well, and then you've got to go back to the start of the last section or try and figure out where you are, or and that's going to really screw up your recording. So I would think about the planning part of that as well, as those kind of points around
That was
separation.
actually my plan was to try to do the second, the latter.
Yeah.
But how do I get it so that I can hear, do use the screen reader and just read? Because all I need to is press down arrow.
Sure. So
Just
get a mic. So I'm going to make some specific mic recommendations. So there's a couple of USB-C mics that are really popular in the blind community that people are using with their computers. There's the Audio Technica ATR2100X, and also the Samsung, not Samsung, Samsung, Samson. Q9U. And both of those microphones are USB and they plug into your computer, and then you can plug your headphones into
Technical,
the
say that again.
microphone. Yeah, so these are going to be in the notes, right? So if you're on the mailing list, Peter's going to make the notes
Oh.
available. So don't worry about trying to write it down just now. The
Oh, okay.
all this information is going to be in the notes. This is what I'm sticking to. So you'll be able to kind of refer back to it. But they're the two microphone recommendations I would say for podcasters just kind of starting out, if you wanted to record with your computer. And then, yeah, I would get yourself a little mic stand. Maybe think about having maybe a Bluetooth keyboard or something like that. So you could have the keyboard on your lap a little bit, maybe away from the mic. And just remember, don't have the keyboard on the same surface as your microphone. That's the kind of the rule. If you want to avoid any vibration from your keyboard going into your microphone, and if you want to avoid your screen reader being heard on your microphone, then make sure you've got some decent over-the-ear headphones so only you hear the screen reader, and that you're not getting too much bleed going back into your microphone.
And then if I want to use my iPhone, because I was thinking about using my iPhone to just do the podcast, or using a standalone device.
Yeah, so those microphones that I mentioned, they will also work with the iPhone. Obviously, if you're referring to notes at the same time, you might want to think about, is the iPhone going to be the most reliable device for that? So I think a little bit of experimentation might be required. You know, I mentioned doing some pilot episodes and stuff like that to really get your workflow down, right? And just try some stuff to try and figure out what's most comfortable for you. Now I like just now, I've got my Braille display on my lap. I've got my laptop on a desk in front of me, and I've got a USB headset for this. Now, ordinarily, if I were at home and I were in my kind of home studio, I would have a microphone and I would have better quality headphones for that. But actually, my workflow wouldn't be massively dissimilar. I would still have my notes open on my computer. But you could use a phone, and a lot of people do. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I would try it. And yeah, I'm going to recommend some email forums as well, where you can kind of kick some of this stuff around with other podcasters and creators. So definitely see this as a kind of a start of the conversation. You know, we're not necessarily going to get to all the answers in this session, but hopefully it kind of introduces the subject and it gives you some tools and tips and places where you can kind of follow up.
Hi Dave, it's Katie here, and I had a question about editing podcasts. So once you've recorded your amazing podcast, what would you recommend using as a general good editing piece of software?
Right, you are a star, because that leads us very nicely onto post-production. And so post-production is everything that happens after you've pressed stop at the end of your recording, okay? And so digital audio production is, you know, you can go on a course and become a sound engineer, right? And it is a profession in its own right. And those of us that are kind of podcasters are kind of dipping our toe in that world. Okay. Now, I would say at the moment, the kind of the go-to package on Windows for a lot of blind content creators who are producing podcasts is probably Reaper. Now, Reaper comes with a bit of a learning curve, but there are lots of resources out there, and improvements keep on coming in terms of the accessibility. So you need a few components to make Reaper work. You need to install some extra add-ins, and maybe Ed, it sounds like you might be a Reaper user, so we're going to get you to come in a second and tell us about chapters. Maybe you can talk about what you use. So Reaper, the kind of the basic 60-day, you know, kind of version of that is free. Lots of people also using Audacity. I believe Goldwave is still knocking about. The important thing, I think, when choosing audio editing software is there are two important considerations. One, is your audio editing software, or does it need to be multi-track, right? Because if you are somebody that regularly records multiple guests, maybe you've got music, maybe you've got screen reader, and you want to be able to manipulate all of those elements in post-production, so turn things up and down or roll off the bass on something, then you're going to need it to be multi-track. So that is, so Reaper is multi-track. The second important consideration is your editing software non-destructive. So back in the bad old days, we all used to use software that would work on the original files. So you made your recordings, you brought your WAV files into your digital audio workstation software, and you make some changes, and those changes were made to the original files. Now, we've moved on from that so that the more modern digital audio editing software, like Reaper, creates a project file. So it's not actually changing those original files. And that means that if your computer crashes halfway through your project, you don't lose anything in your original recordings, and you're able to kind of undo the changes you've made. And I think those two are perhaps, you know, some of the most important considerations. So I would recommend Reaper. It's certainly not the easiest to learn, and everybody has a preference. And I would just give a few a try and see what works well for you. But Reaper is certainly very well supported in the community. But if you find Reaper a little bit overwhelming, you can certainly get a lot done with packages like Audacity. And if you're on the Mac, let us know, and maybe we can come up with some other options. So what are the sorts of things that you're going to want to do as well as editing? Of course, you're going to want to clip out the bits that you don't want anymore. You might want to shuffle stuff around. You might want to edit out the bit where you had the coughing fit. And that's, you know, the most basic part of that process. And that is a skill. It's something I'm very slow at, I don't mind saying. There are blind audio producers who are amazingly quick at it. Emma Tracy, who works on the BBC's Access All podcast, she's amazingly quick at editing spoken word audio. So it might be something that you find you've got a natural aptitude for. I've done plenty of it over the years, and people say, oh, it sounds really good, Dave. You just, you know, you're a natural. What they don't know is I spent the whole weekend doing it, or I stayed up all night doing it, to the point where now, actually, I don't mind saying that I'll get somebody else to come in and help me with that, because it might be that that's the thing they're really good at, and they might not want to do the talking. They might be quite happy to help with the editing. Something else that you might do in post-production is what we call noise reduction. So if you find that, oh no, I took all the steps possible to prepare my environment and get the best equipment and all the rest of it, but actually I've still got a humming noise or a hissing noise or something in the recording that I don't want, then there are tools that can help reduce that. But it's always better to prevent than cure those sorts of things. You might have heard the term dynamic compression. That basically means evening out the levels to make sure that the loud things aren't too loud and the quiet things aren't too quiet. And that basically avoids your listener having to turn their volume up and down. But remember, you know, too much processing can really ruin beautiful audio. So try and use those tools sparingly. When it comes to encoding to MP3 or M4A or whatever format you're going to encode to, obviously make sure that you don't encode down to a level where you turn your beautifully clean audio into something that sounds watery. And I'm going to come to tagging, and I'm going to ask Ed to come back in. So tagging is the process of basically labeling up your file to give it a proper title and episode name or number, and maybe even a bit of a description. And I think this would be a good point, Ed, to kind of explain for everybody about chapters and what chapter markers can do and what the benefits are.
Sure. Thanks, Dave. On chapter markers, episode numbers and episode titles, you've broadly got two ways of doing it, and I do a hybrid approach. So your podcast host will probably, it'll certainly let you put in the title and the episode number, and most of them will let you add chapters. Chapters essentially enable your listener to skip from one part of the podcast to another. So if you're covering three or four different topics, then you might want to set those as chapters so listeners can skip them. I also understand there are podcast clients that will effectively let you grey out chapters at the start of the episode. So if you know you don't want to listen to topics 3, 5, and 7, grey them out, and it won't make you skip chapter by chapter when you're listening. Most podcast hosts don't do that, but some do. So for chapter markers, the only audio editor I'm aware of that supports that is Reaper. And you do it by naming a marker. So you go to the point at which you want your chapter, you press Shift M to name your marker, and you use a syntax, which is chap, as in David's a nice chap, in caps, equals, and then whatever your chapter's called. And you do that right the way through. And then when you render your file, when you export it to MP3, make sure you export what they call your metadata. Reaper makes that fairly clear. Oh, someone's having pasta. That sounds amazing. You can, as I say, do that on your podcast host. That's a bit fiddlier. Accessibility will vary, so Reaper will work for that. I second what Dave says, though, that Reaper is, I think, the best and most accessible editor out there, but it is quite overwhelming and it does have a learning curve. So if you think, actually, what I'm doing, you know, if it's maybe me talking about stuff, And my editing is going to consist of chopping stuff out and kind of smoothing it over. And I don't care about chapters. Then, to be honest, I would use Audacity all day long. It's free, it's less complicated. But as Dave says, you know, if it's a bit more complex, if you need chapters, then something like Reaper.
Brilliant. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate that. Glad you were here. I think you certainly explained it better than I ever would. So with publishing then, so once you've got your podcast in a form where you think, yep, that's it, that sounds like the episode that I want to put out there. As I mentioned earlier, you can certainly just, wang your file on a Dropbox or a OneDrive or whatever, and you can post the public link to that cloud storage location on your social media, and you go, here you go. I recorded a podcast about going to Site City or whatever it is, and people on social media can come along and they can listen to it. But technically, that's not a podcast. A podcast is where you have a page of updating content, so a feed, a bit like a news page, I suppose, on a website where new episodes appear at the top of that feed. Okay. And to build that feed, you can either roll your own, which does require a bit of technical know-how. There are plugins for website publishing platforms like WordPress, or you can use a podcasting publishing platform. And I think the sort of the go-to one that a lot of us quite like at the moment that works really well is Pinecast. They have free and paid options available depending on how many episodes and how much content you want to share and so on. There are others. Podbean, we know works quite well. Some people use Audio Boom. That seems to be the one that RNIB are using at the moment. They've all got pros and cons, but I would urge you, if you're looking for a podcasting platform, Pinecast is quite well liked and quite well reviewed in our community. So, has anybody, before I kind of wrap up, I'm aware I've been going for well over an hour, got any thoughts about post-production and publishing?
Actually, I do. This is Viola Benton. This is my first time on one of your, I'm from Washington State, and you were talking about Reaper, and I just downloaded the 60-day version, but like you said, you have to install a bunch of things. Where can I find out what you need to do so that JAWS is my preferred reader will work correctly? I'm a little bit, this is my first time with it. I have Goldwave and I have Studio Recorder, but I wanted to try Reaper.
Okay, so I think you might find it helpful to join maybe one of the communities. So there's a website called Reapers Without Peepers, RWP. There's also Jonathan Mosen's Blind Podmakers Creators
Yes,
group.
I'm on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so those are great places to kind of ask those sort of newbie, kind of questions to those packages. There is a Reaper kind of accessibility wiki that has lots of links to articles and audio recordings from people who've tried to explain Reaper from a sort of a blindness perspective. I know there's a website called Audio Pizza. I think they have produced some Reaper tutorials. I think the Global Voice as well have produced some Reaper tutorials. So hopefully some of that gives you some signposts to get started. But as Ed says, it is a learning curve, and so be kind to yourself. Do little and often, and if you really do find it's just too much hassle, maybe have a look at Audacity, because actually a lot of people, even people in the BBC, are using Audacity for stuff that actually makes it to air. It's by no means an inferior. It's just perhaps a little bit easier to kind of get going.
Can I also say,
Right.
Tim Pennant here,
Hi, Tim.
there are quite a lot of people on the RWP list who actually, that is what they do, is to train people on Reaper. So, and they, obviously it's a paid service, but that might be worth looking at if people really want to get stuck into Reaper fairly quickly.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I have some comments about Mac, if you don't mind.
Yeah, do, please.
I'm Adrian Thomason, the guy behind the Accessible Computer podcast. I use podcast chapters for inserting chapters in audio podcast in Mac. And as editor, I use Amadeus Pro. I know it's old, probably is not that much in fashion so much, but I use it for probably 10 years. And as far as fitting the purpose, why to change it? And the benefit is also in Amadeus Pro, I can add the meta tags. And one little thing, what probably many people in working with Windows don't know, in WinApp, you can add meta tags for your audio file. So including artwork, yeah? Yeah. Yeah, and another thing I would like to mention about devices, I think a Vocaster Pro is worth mentioned because it's a good device for podcasting, it's designed for podcasting, it's accessible with screen readers, including JAWS in Windows. And probably another device will be the Evo from Audient, also with accessible interfaces for audio interfaces, accessible with screen readers, I mean. That's all what I wanted to say.
No, it's brilliant. And some really, you know, epic, you know, recommendations there. I guess the thing is we can't, in a session like this, list every single device, but I would urge people to check out Sound Without Sight, which is a hub for musicians and audio producers that we are attempting to build, you know, kind of collaboratively with the community, as being a place where, you know, if you're getting started and you're not sure where to signpost, they always welcome content submissions. We're hoping Sound Without Sight, you know, could potentially become like a almost like an Apple Viz for audio producers, right? So the more of us that get involved and share our expertise and experiences on there, the better. So please do get involved in that. If you're perhaps having listened to this thinking, oh my goodness, Dave, it sounds like a lot of hard work starting your own podcast, I'm not going to bother. Why not start by contributing to somebody else's podcast? You've heard from several podcasters on this session, including myself, and we'd all be glad to work with you to maybe produce a small package or a piece or something that could be included in another podcast. And that can be a great way to kind of get experience with recording without having to worry, you know, too much about all the post-production and publishing aspects. I mentioned some of the communities as well as Sound Without Sight. There's also the Blind Maker Podmaker email group. You can join that by sending an email to Podmaker. Let's see, hang on. Let me get that. It's creators-subscribe. That's it. Creators-subscribe at theblindpodmaker.com. And that's going to be in the notes as well. So don't worry about trying to jot that down. And also, I've included some links in there to tutorials from people like Brian Hartch and Jonathan Mosen. Some of those are kind of paid for tutorials about unleashing your inner podcast. So it's worth having a look at those. And I've also included the microphone recommendations and some information about the Zoom Essential series, as well as some of those online services for publishing your podcast. So I hope that's a useful kind of whistle-stop tour, and I'm confident the conversation will continue. Very happy for you to contact me. Yep.
Yeah, it's Phil here from Harwich. Just to let you know, I use Goldwave, and I've got the script files, which are really handy. Like, you can do things like Alt-Shift-S for start marker, Alt-Shift-F for finish marker, and Alt-Shift-E for, you know, where you are in the file.
Yeah.
And I find that really useful. And I do live radio on Bigger Radio International. I do a music program 3 times a week. And you were talking about echo earlier on. Because I want to sound like the original offshore radio, Radio London, I tend to put in a bit of echo. Yeah, but about that much, really, just to have a sort of bit of echo in the background. But of course, I can control exactly how much I want, or turn it up too far.
Well, And that's the best thing, isn't it, about all these rules? They're all meant to be broken. They're all made to be broken. And sometimes that's where the creativity or the nostalgia, you know, can really come from by you know, playing or bending with some of these rules. I've just shared, you know, what I found to be kind of recommended, you know, good practice and things that I've found to, you know, kind of work well for me. But absolutely go out there.
It works very well with yours. Yeah. No, so I just want to know, okay?
Yeah, sure. Well, and Gold Wave, good to know it's still going strong after all these years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Will I make one more point about chapters? Though?
Please do, yeah.
There's a whole community of people really who don't really see themselves as podcasters, which is the talking newspaper people. And at the moment, there's something like I think probably in the end, they'll need to make their content available via podcasts. But I mean, in their case, they can have something like... 50 individual items, and the point of recording separate files for that you can switch from one article to another. Where there are that many articles, then it becomes really important. I'm not quite sure how the talking newspaper community is going to move towards podcasting, but I think it's going to be something that they do.
Mm. Yeah, and we're going to have to help them with that. And some of them are podcasting. I have a feeling the Worcester Talking News is available as a podcast. But, I mean, you're right. That's a really good example of where chapter markers might actually be super helpful as well, just to kind of skip to the bit that you want. But then, of course, there's the whole, you know, usability issue with that. A lot of people who are listening to podcasts are doing so on smart speakers. They might not know, you know, the voice commands to jump to the next chapter and things like that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right, and it's fascinating points, and those guys are going to definitely need our support.
I have a question for you, Dave. There are hundreds and thousands of podcasts out there, and you've told us brilliantly how to get podcasts up, but how can we actually get them noticed and get people to listen to them?
Well, absolutely. And that all comes down to marketing, right? And so obviously sharing your podcast on social media, making sure that you tell your friends and family, trying to get your podcast in front of people that you think might share it as well. And being just unashamed to say to your listeners, look, please do, you know, like and share this podcast. That's how you grow it. And you know, Europe's number one podcast, Diary of a CEO, hosted by Stephen Bartlett, he absolutely starts with that every single episode. You know, I'm going to ask you one little favor. If you like the podcast, please share it and please tell your friends about it. So it is marketing. It's making sure that you get it in the eye line. So I tend, if I have a really good one, you know, if I think that something's gone particularly well, then I'll stick it on my LinkedIn. I've got like 1,000 people on there, you know, who some of who might check it out and might share it. And also maybe try and get yourself, talk your way in onto other people's podcasts as well. Because podcasters, even the top podcasters, they're all looking for guests. They're all looking for content, right? And sometimes they're even willing to let fellow podcasters come along and hawk their wares, as it were. So, you know, I've unashamedly plugged, you know, tonight for you guys, a few of the podcasts that I'm involved with, and, you know, a few of the projects I'm involved with. So just use every public speaking opportunity you get, whether that's face to face, online, on social media, wherever it may be, to share and tell people about your podcast and get the word out there. Does that answer your question, Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers.
Hi, Dave, it's Ed again. Sorry, just a couple of things I wanted to come back on. I know you were saying semi-jokingly about posting to Dropbox and OneDrive, and I've never experienced this before, but I think if you do that and become very popular and 30,000 people start streaming your podcast off OneDrive, Microsoft might shut your account. So please don't do that. I have heard of people who've circulated audio files to be streamed on what are, you know, essentially collaboration cloud service, cloud storage platforms, and supposedly have had their accounts closed. Now, like I say, I haven't had it, I haven't seen it, but I've had that reported on a number of occasions. They might have been up to all sorts of naughties, but it's better to have, as Dave was saying, a dedicated podcast host, or at least, you know, put it up on a website and create your own feed where you know that you have that bandwidth availability. Other thing I meant to say is, when I was talking about Reaper before, Reaper is available on Mac too, and the accessibility features that are available on Windows are largely available on Mac. I say largely because people have created JAWS scripts and NVDA add-ons, but Reaper will work on the Mac pretty well. The other thing, and I think you mentioned it earlier, Dave, so I'm not sure if it's in your link, but or in your links, but another good podcast host is Acast, or Acast. I've no idea how you're actually supposed to pronounce it. What I like about that, and you may be detecting a theme here, and we're talking about Audacity, is that Acast is free, and unlike most of the free tiers, it doesn't restrict how many episodes you can post in a month, or how many hours, or how much bandwidth you're allowed, how many plays you're allowed. What it does do is restrict your file size to 150 meg. But if you stick to Dave's rule about, you know, half hour, an hourish podcast, you're not going to go over 150 meg anyway. So it might not have some of the integration stuff that the others offer. But if you're on a budget, then Acast is £0 or $0 for Viola and others in the States.
Yeah, I think you can do a short podcast on Pinecast. I think they do have a free tier. You know, it might only be, I don't know, a dozen episodes or something. Go and look into to that. And you know, the other thing, Ed, while I've got you,
Acast is limitless, so you can,
there you
like, we're on
go.
Acast.
Boom.
We're on our 200 and no, sorry, 180th episode this week, I think, and we're hosting on Acast
Fantastic.
for £0.
Great stuff. Can I ask you a quick question, Ed, while I've got you? I was talking about recording apps earlier, and a lot of the examples I gave were iOS. Have you got any Android ones that you would recommend?
Audio Labs, I would recommend on Android.
Audio Labs.
Audio Labs.
Perfect. All right. Thank you very much, Ed.
Okay.
And you know, those cloud storage services, they are an important tool in your kind of production process. You know, it might be the way you get content from listeners. You can also obviously invite listeners to send short audio clips via email, but certainly for longer pieces, cloud storage services are a great way to share your content. But yeah, if you're publishing a podcast, then yeah, do use a publishing service like Pinecast, Acast, Podbeam, Audioboom, and others are available.
Hey guys, this is Alex, and I've got a short question on recording on location. Do you use an external mic on your Zoom H Essential, or do you use its built-in mics? Thanks.
So for me, I tend to just use its built-in mics. I've got the H1 Essential, which is the smallest one. It's the baby. It's the kind of the one that you use for vox popping. It's the one that we recorded Stevie with. And you know, quite honestly, providing you don't move it around too much in your hand, it does have a bit of handling noise. You can get some pretty decent results, providing you put a good pop shield on the end of there. If I was recording in a more of a studio setting, you know, at home or in a more of a controlled environment, then absolutely I would be using an XLR microphone plugged into an audio interface. So it really just depends on the circumstances, but I want to be able to whip out my digital audio recorder at a moment's notice. So I often have my H1 Essential in my inside pocket, just ready to go, because you just never know when you're going to meet that person or have that moment. So I think it's important to be able to capture content, you know, spontaneously as well. So yeah, different tools for different tasks.
Hi, I've got a kind of content related question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
You were talking about music. Now, I'm very fearful of playing music because I'm mindful that surely intellectual property right issues would come in. Could you talk about things like that that might catch out the beginner and the unwary?
Yeah, so Certainly, you know, a lot of people use YouTube, for example, as another channel through which you can share your podcasts. And if you publish something on there that contains what YouTube believes to be copyrighted content, and they have software that tries to check for this, then they will take it down. So it is something that we all need to be aware of, right? You'd hate to put your heart and soul into something and publish something and then suddenly find it's been taken down. Obviously, if you've got an independent music artist and it's original material and they're performing it for the benefit of you or your podcast listeners, then fine. If the music is really kind of indistinct and far away in the background, I don't think anyone's going to really care about that too much. As I said, I would always try and avoid recording with music in the background. There is also a thing called fair use, where you can get away with a couple of seconds of a track. And I try not to roll that dice because I'm never quite sure how many seconds or, you know, what the rules really are on some of that stuff. And I see it, if I want to include music, as an opportunity to give back to the community. So I go to somebody like Andre Louis and I go, "Hey, Andre, here's a few tens of pounds. I'd really love to use a piece of your music that you've created as like the theme for our podcast." And so we did with Braillecast, for example. I commissioned Andre to write the theme for that, and we put some Braille equipment sound effects over it, and we ended up with quite a distinctive sort of sound for that. So I sort of view it as an opportunity to maybe support an independent artist if I want to include music. And then, of course, there are also royalty-free music libraries. So you can go online and you can search for royalty-free music libraries where you pay a one-off fee and then you're allowed to use that music however you like. But I'm pretty sure there are people in the community that would benefit so much if we as podcasters just go to them and say, "Actually, have you got a bit of music that you've written, that you've recorded, that we could use for this podcast?"
And what if what you're going to do, it actually involves pre-existing recorded music? How would you find out what's the correct thing? Because there's different organisations for different aspects, are there?
Yeah, and of course, with like radio, for example, there are rules around what you can broadcast, because basically music royalties, it's a complicated subject, right? And there are people who are full-time professionals in this whole area, right? But as I understand it, there are basically two sets of rights that you need to be concerned with. There's performance, there's the rights of the artist to the song, so the notes and the words and stuff like that, and then there's the rights of the record company to the actual recording. So they're the people that made that particular recording. So if you just go and start playing songs on your podcast and you're, you know, potentially earning advertising revenue from that, and that's not something I've really talked about that, then you do stand the risk of being you know, accused of fraud. I think the reality is, for most small podcasters, no one's really going to waste their time on, you know, kind of taking you to court and all the rest of it. You're just going to get a strongly worded letter and be told to cease and desist if you were benefiting from using somebody else's copyrighted music. So I tend to take the avoid it kind of line and play it safe, particularly as I do a podcast for RNIB, and RNIB is regulated by the Charity Commission, and they have a licensed radio station that's, you know, on FM and Freeview. So we're very cautious about not using recorded music. And you'll notice, right, on things like Desert Island Discs, they used to edit out the music, I think, you know, on some versions of Desert Island Discs for this very, very reason. So look, I'm not a copyright lawyer. I wouldn't pretend to be. I think the safest course of action is to try and avoid it if you can. Did you have something specific in mind? Were you thinking about starting a music podcast?
I'm contemplating doing a well-being / exercise podcast.
Yeah.
And so I would like to have
some music.
Some kind of music, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is to find out who owns it, that music, where that music will come from. Because some of that type of music is royalty free. You know, the sort of music they sometimes play in like spas and stuff like that. Some of that music may be available royalty free, and you might be allowed to use it. So it might need a bit of research and a bit of digging around to find out, you know, what is available that would suit your purposes that isn't gonna, gonna bankrupt you before you've even started.
Yes, because you haven't talked about the cost of any of this. So I thought that's quite interesting, the business budget.
No, I haven't, because really, you know, this was about the process of getting it out there. And, you know, some of us podcast for a hobby. Some of us are podcasting because we're kind of paid to do it as part of our job. The amount of people who actually manage to make a business out of podcasts are very, very small. You know, it's like the number of YouTubers that are actually managing to make money out of that. You know, you really need to be getting in the, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of listens or views for it to really become like a viable full-time, you know, usually people are podcasting, and this is back to the why at the beginning. You know, usually people are podcasting to complement something else that they are doing, whether it's to promote a product or a service or connect with a community. You know, what's the reason for it? And if the reason for it is I want to start a podcast because I want to make loads of money, then quite honestly, for me, that's a little bit naive. I would be going out and having a little word with myself, because
I wasn't meaning it like that, but there are what she just described it as upfront costs.
So whether
you're doing it for, if you need money up front,
yeah,
you need to do that as part of your pre-planning. I don't want to hog this, but you're referring to some notes. How do we get those notes if we're not on a mailing list? Is your colleague
shall I come in there? It's well past 9 o'clock in the UK and past 10 o'clock in Frankfurt where Dave is, so I think we should let him go. I'll answer your question about the notes, but I'd like to say a huge heartfelt thank you to Dave. That was a masterful presentation. You covered so much, really, really informative and very understandable too, so many, many thanks, Dave. The recording will be up on the website, and that's tavip.org.uk, along with all the notes. So it's a handout that will be on the Tavip website. So that's how you can get that. It'll take a few days to get it up, but it's going to be there.
And can I add as well, just on costs, because I'm aware that, you know, many in our community, you know, don't have masses of money to throw at podcasting. I have been careful to make sure that in that handout, I've recommended a mix of free and paid products. So with free software and the microphone that's built into your phone, you can produce a very listenable and very exciting and desirable podcast. You can do quite a lot with not a lot. So this doesn't have to be an expensive process. Yes, you can spend more money on microphones and more premium services and software packages and mixers and all the rest of it. But actually, you don't need a huge amount to get a podcast out the door. What you need is a great idea and a little bit of time, dedication and application to really bring your idea to fruition.
Brilliant. Thanks so much. I think on that note, we'll close. Unless you've got anything, I didn't want to shut you down, Dave, but have you got anything else to add, or you happy to leave it there?
Nope, that's great. Thank you very much. And fascinating questions and really lovely discussion with everybody, and happy to carry on the conversation. And if you want to get in touch, you can reach me through Sound Without Sight or Peter. I'm sure we can speak again.
Great. Thanks again.